This podcast episode is brought to you by something that I am immersed in right now, which is spring break, you guys. I don't know if you're on spring break right now or if it's sneaking up on you around the corner, but cheers. We made it. I say we earned it. And I don't know what you're up to during yours, but mine is going to be filled with the glamorous adventures of me staying up super late and hanging out in my PJs all day, perhaps spending a little bit of time in my sewing room and maybe finishing up some of these projects that are actually staring at me right now. So cheers to you, spring break. It's about time you got here. I wanted to talk to you today. I was making a little list the other day about some things that as an art teacher, I've changed my mind about. Some things that I used to really cling really hard to, some firm beliefs that I had that I'm, you know, starting to loosen that grip a bit. And I thought I would share them with you. These are my top five things that I've changed my mind about as an art teacher. So thing number one, and I've actually kind of vacillated back and forth on this one a lot. And that is that a silent art room equals a focused art room. And of course, all of us want our students to focus, right? So in my mind, I guess I was kind of feeling like that was the way that an art room should sound. And I say that like with question marks at the end, because even as I was thinking it and saying it and trying to implement it, I'm like, but really though, it doesn't seem quite right. I don't know. I think that at the end of the day, how you run and operate your art room should be all about what I talk about quite a bit, the S's, your setup, your students, your situation, your school, and then we'll throw in the Y, and that's you. It's really what you are comfortable with as an art teacher. You've got your finger on the pulse of what you want your art room to be like and how your students are in that environment. And I think you should go from there. So I'm just going to share with you when I say this, that, you know, that's kind of like how my thought process was. I've seen a lot of art teachers kind of share their methods on how they have a really calm and quiet art room. And I always look at that longingly and think that, man, I think that that would be great. And I do think it's great, especially for those teachers whose students thrive in that environment. I do enjoy having a nice, calm, and quiet art room. I mean, who doesn't? But at the same time, it's definitely something that I don't know if I've necessarily changed my mind about. It's just I kind of am on the fence about. So let me dig a little bit deeper. I actually have a list right here. My thoughts were scattered, so I tried to jot them down, and it's looking like chicken scratch to me. So we'll see how that goes. So like I said, I kind of always associated silence with focus. And I mean, that's when I'm doing my best work, is when I'm working and I'm deep in thought and I'm deep in imagination or whatever it is I'm creating. So why wouldn't it be the same for our students, right? In a way, I think that it depends on the activity. I think some activities really lend themselves to more focused work. Drawing, painting, oftentimes glazing clay projects because they're handling something delicate. I feel like that could require more intense focus. And then there's other art activities that I think are more social events. Anytime the kids are like rolling up their sleeves and getting their hands dirty, working with clay, creating with plaster, working with paper mache, whenever there's like a texture involved, I feel like that there's like the room is buzzing. There's an excitement to the room. So I always kind of like change my mind, loosen the rules a little bit when it comes to the chatter and the sound in my room. But that being said, I've been kind of thinking things from the flip side perspective. Yes, drawing does require focus, and sometimes focus looks like silence or sounds like silence, but sometimes focus is really, well, it is dependent on who the artist is and how they operate, right? Because what if, as an artist, you or your students when it comes to drawing? Drawing is a form of storytelling. So maybe your form of focus means you have to be speaking and telling your story, talking about it and explaining it as you draw. So therefore, your focus isn't silence. And to be silenced makes it difficult for you to focus because your drawing is a form of storytelling. Same with painting. Painting can be a really quiet and calming experience unless you're in the same room with kids who are painting maybe for the first time in a while. Maybe they're just painting for the first time ever, like kindergarten. And then you realize that painting isn't quiet because painting is about discovery. And so there's chatter, there's noise, there's excitement because there's the discovery. So as I was thinking about this, I thought, yeah, focus doesn't equal silence. It doesn't have to. It can for some students, but for others, it's going to be a little bit noisy. It's going to involve more chatter. It definitely could become a social kind of event. And then one more time, on the flip side, this is going to be like a coin that I just keep flipping back and forth. It's like, I'm so I can't make up my mind about it. I guess there's just, you can't really pinpoint your thoughts on this. You can't just, it's not a black or white issue. That's what I'm trying to say. There's a whole spectrum of gray in here. Because when I do ask my students to work quietly with focus, I will say this, the quality of art usually shows, right? They are spending more time deep in thought and deep in the process and not so busy, shall we say. So it's like, I'm torn on this issue because there's so many yeah buts that you can throw into the mix, right? And then, like I said, then there's other activities that tend to be a little on the more loud side, paper mache and clay, like I mentioned. But do they really have to be? Do they necessarily have to be noisy when they work? Because what if we did rein them in on those messy kind of activities and ask them to work quieter, more with focus? What would the results be then? So with all of that in mind, I think what I've ultimately settled on is that a quiet room doesn't necessarily mean that it's a focused room. I think in the end for me, and again, this is me, it's going to be different for you, I think it's all about a balance. First of all, what might work in somebody else's room just might not be a good fit for you and your kids, right? And I think that teaching our students, at least for me, teaching them a respectful noise level with the focus being on their work and chatting about shared discoveries is the sweet spot. That's where it's at. At the beginning of the year, I share with my students an acronym called TALK. And it's all about the noise level or how we should talk in my art room. And the T for talk stands for teaching. We definitely need to be teaching each other in the art room how to do things, where things go. If we see a friend who needs help, we teach them. That's appropriate talk in the art room. The A in talk stands for art related. We, of course, get way off course. I'm usually the main culprit of that when it comes to getting my students to talk about things that we're totally not talking about. But that's, you know, part of the fun. That's part of giving them a glimpse into being human and how art can be fun. But the more obviously that they can keep their conversations and I can keep mine, hello, art related, the better. The L in talk is for learning, because when you're learning, you're talking. You have to ask questions in order to understand. And the K stands for kind-hearted. So I think making sure to really reinforce that, not just at the beginning of the year, you know, we're coming upon after spring break where Let's be honest, things get a little bit loose. We all get that taste for summer with spring break, and then we're just dying for it to get here. And that's, I feel like, where the struggle becomes very real when it comes to discipline. And I don't like to spend my spring that way, and I know my students don't either. So I think revisiting this for me when we go back will be a good thing. That's going to help them understand respectful noise level with focus on work and shared discoveries. I think another thing would be for me to allow equal time for focus and then equal share time. So sometimes in my art room, what I'll do, especially when my kids are off and running, right? They're going and gathering their supplies. One thing I noticed with some of my older classes, it's funny because they're older, you think they would know better. But once they're up and moving around, they'll go to their seats and be like, what were we supposed to do it again? What was that? Miss Stevens, what are we doing? And so what I started doing was having them have 5 minutes of focus. We called it Gimme Five. And I would set my timer and I would say, okay, it's absolute silence for the next 5 minutes. And what that did was it helped them go get their supplies, kind of get their head in the game, and then start. And because they're older and they're definitely social, all of these small humans are social, right? When they would hear the timer go off, I would just give them a little reminder. Remember, we're working with talk. Make sure you keep your conversations at a respectful tone. Let's try to keep them art-ish focused. And yeah, so that's something that's kind of given me a little bit of a balance and given them a balance too. I think it's also really important to get them up moving and talking about their art. This one's tricky for me because I have 30 minutes in my room. So pretty much by the time they all head to their seats and they're working, next thing you know, the cleanup alarm goes off and it's time for us to scoot. So sometimes what I will do is give them a little bit of time right before cleanup to walk around. I think some people call this a gallery walk where they can walk around, check out what their neighbors are doing, talk about it with each other, and just use that as an idea starter for next time, right? Oh, so-and-so did this with their chalk pastels. I'm going to try that next time. I kind of like to do that really at the front end of art class when I'm passing out papers where they can check out everybody's artwork. I usually put them under the Elmo so their artwork shows up on Stevie the TV. That's the name of my television. He has big googly eyes. So we can kind of get a conversation started about what we're about to create and get ideas and inspiration from one another. But of course, giving them that time to get up and move around and talk would be a great way for me to get a balance when it comes to talking and then focus. And I think also in the end, you know your students. So you can kind of get a read, like, it's noisy in my art room right now, but you know what? All of them are highly engaged. All of them are chatting about their artwork. They're having a great time. Kindergarten, I feel like, is the best at this. Like, I don't mind if kindergarten is chatty because they almost are always talking about their artwork. They are so excited. So you, as a teacher, you can really tell when that conversation is focused and when there's work going on at the same time and when the conversation is all about just like Among Us whateverness. It's going off the rails real fast. So that's something I've changed my mind about. Focus doesn't have to mean a silent art room. But if that's what you and your students crave, go for it. All right, so now I'm probably going to get myself in a little bit of hot water with my next one. So a lot of you art teachers out there are probably familiar with choice-based art and TAB, which is Teaching for Artistic Behavior. There are two different modes of kind of running your art room with a similar kind of thought process, meaning that you set your art room up like an open studio. And your students, when they come in, after some instruction on whatever it is you feel like sharing or introducing that day, your students are then free to go to some open centers and explore their art materials, usually, hopefully, with some sort of a plan or an idea in mind of what they're going to create that day. In theory, to me, this has always sounded like an amazing thing. However, I have always struggled with Number one, 30-minute art classes and letting my kids go and actually have enough time to really dive in and dig deep and create something in an open studio. That's thing number one. Thing number two I always struggled with is I have so much that I want to share with them and so much that I want them to learn. And I find that I am able to teach that better with lessons that are more structured, that I can pour as many artists, concepts, vocabulary, etc. into, that I find that I can't do that as much with the flip side, you know, the open or the TAB choice-based room. Lately, however, my art room for recess art has turned into a little bit of an open studio format. I'm not even going to say that it's anything like a TAB or choice-based. I've never seen one of those rooms in action. I'm not schooled in what that looks like. These people are very trained and immersed in what it is that they do and share in their art room, so I don't claim to even know enough about it to go there. So we're just going to say that during what I call recess art, I've been seeing an open kind of studio, and I have to tell you, I really dig it. So what is recess art? For me, I have a third and fourth grade classes that I have said to them that, hey, if you guys want to come in during recess, you're more than welcome to do that. And when they come in, they are able to just tell me what they want to do. It's usually during my lunchtime or a plan time. And they walk in and some of them will go straight to getting out whatever it is they have previously been working on during recess art. And for my fourth graders, what that usually looks like is working on sewing projects. They are obsessed with sewing pillows. They've been sewing little backpack charms. They've made just about every kind of sewing thing you can imagine. Stuffies and all this kind of stuff. And then once we were working with clay, I would have kids come in and they would say, hey, can I work with clay? Can I make another mug? Can I make whatever? So I would just say, yep, there's the clay. There's your clay mat. Just make sure you put everything back where you got it from because I have kindergarten coming in a hot minute. I got to tell you, it's kind of magical to look around a room and see some kids weaving on looms because that's what they wanted to do. So I got them started on that. Some kids sewing on pillows, which is a concept they learn in class. We all made hand-stitched pillows in class. And then taking the concept they learned from there and creating a heart-shaped pillow or a stuffy or whatever it is they want to make. And then I have another group of kids sitting and working on making a bunch of mugs. I had one girl, I think, make five different mugs. She wanted to make one for every member of her family. And there's been times when I've just looked around the room and I thought, this is amazing. This is what an art room should be, right? A place where kids can come in and say, I want to make XYZ today. And I just give them a little instruction if needed and tell them where the supplies are and they go for it. That's just not something I ever thought that I would say, that I would say that, yeah, this whole open thing is pretty magical. I mean, I knew it was magical. Like I said, I knew in theory it sounds like a beautiful, beautiful thing. It sounds amazing. It sounds like what an art room would be like in a movie. But I just couldn't wrap my brain around how that would look until I started letting it kind of happen organically during recess art. I didn't set out to make a choice based or a tab. And like I said, it's nowhere near that. But I didn't go into that with the intention. It's just kids walking in saying, hey, I saw that you had this thing that you made hanging up over here. Can you show me how to do that? Or I saw that the third graders were making XYZ. Can you show me how to do that? And it just went from there. So I don't know what that means going forward. I don't know what that would look like during a classroom setting. I don't think that I'm ready to approach it there. But if I were to as I continue to have recess art, it's definitely something that's happening. And what I am working on now is setting up art supplies so they're more accessible for my kids when they do come in for recess art. meaning I don't have to stop and grunt and get out supplies and dig things out of the closet for them. Now what I want to do is have my supplies more out and available for them. You want to watercolor paint today? Great. You already know where the stuff is. You want to work with sewing or weaving? Perfect. The fiber arts area is over there. So thinking of my room in that respect, I think it will make it more accessible for them when they come in and want to do that kind of stuff. Who knew that I would ever think like that? But, you know, after 23 years of teaching art, I think that you have to be willing to say, yep, I've changed my mind on that. And yep, that works. And yep, that doesn't work. So let's move on to number three. What else have I written on my little list here? Oh, yes. So this year, thanks to the pandemic, we have had to be really structured with where the kids stand in line, how they walk in the room, where they sit on the floor during instruction time, the tables they go to sit at, and where they line up. We have a number order. Each kid is assigned a number. Jim is number one. Kira is number two. Jake is number three, right? And everywhere they go, everything is numbered. So as they enter, they sit on a numbered spot on the floor. Their table has a numbered spot. The reason being is contact tracing so that we always know which kids are near one another if one of them were to get sick. I'm sure you guys do something similar in your room. Previously in my art room, we never had a numbered system. Like, I know the teachers had the kids numbered and they would be like, here's our sheet of numbered kids. And I'd be like, oh, thank you for that. And then I'd slide it in the recycle bin because I just can't keep up with it. Or so I thought. I love this numbered system because there's never any confusion where anybody should be. When we come in and we sit on the floor, there's no more, I was going to sit there first, or there's no more fussing about where we were going to sit on the floor or who was here, or I want to sit next to my friend. No, we walk in, we sit in our spot immediately. Then when it's time to line up, we never have to worry about, you know, I'm the line leader. Thank you. This is the one gift from COVID that I would like to just say thank you for. No more line leader. No more special person of the day is I'm supposed to be up right now. It doesn't really matter, does it? Because now we're all in our numbered spot. Please get in your numbered order. It's a gift. And I have to say that it really has cut down on any of that little stuff, that nonsensical stuff that just kind of eats into your class time. So that's not something I ever thought that I would, number one, be able to stay on top of since I'm not a very organized person. And number two, want to even tackle because, you know, I just thought it would be too restrictive. But here's something I know is true, and this just goes to prove it. Boundaries and structure allow for freedom, right? When you have more structure and more organization, because that's what that is, an organized kind of classroom setup, it just gives you so much more time and so much more freedom. Suddenly, we're not futzing about stuff that's not important, so we can focus on what is important. Not something I ever thought I'd be into, but now I plan to always go with a numbered system. Thing number four that I've changed my mind about, again, looking at my list, classroom art supplies are boring. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I was really, last March, one full year ago, I was really struggling because I wanted to go live and teach art every day. I don't know if you're familiar, but this time last year, I was on spring break and then we just never went back to school. And I started doing daily live art lessons for about an hour on my Instagram and my Facebook page. And all of those videos that I created, there were over 50 of them, are now archived on my YouTube channel. So you're free to watch them, enjoy them. If I don't know if enjoy, that might be giving myself a pat on the back. Watch them, critique them, share them in your art room, whatever you see fit. But what I struggled with initially was I had to really think, okay, what supplies do my kids have at home? I mean, when we left last March, we didn't pack up our desks and take home all of our art supplies that we might have had. I didn't create take-home packets and take-home art supplies for them. It's just not something that we did. So I had to think, what do my kids have? Pencils, let's hope. Paper, even if it's scrap. Maybe some markers. Probably crayons. Maybe some sort of adhesive, whether it be tape. Doubtful that it's glue, perhaps a glue stick, and maybe some scissors. And I was so frustrated because I thought, well, what can you do with that, right? In my art room, I kind of have this feeling that when my kids come to my room, we shouldn't be using the, quote, normal art supplies. Because if you come to me twice a week, then we should be using the cool stuff, the stuff that you never get to experience anywhere else. I've since changed my mind on that too. But this experience made me really have to stop and think, okay, if this is that very small, limited amount of supplies that they have, what can we do with it? Once I kind of let go of my negative attitude about those supplies, I started getting a lot of ideas, a lot of ideas. Well, like 50 ideas, right? Because that's how many videos that I did. And what I realized was that it wasn't the art supplies that was limiting. It was my imagination that was limiting. Your only limitation is your imagination. And if you can stretch and really think past your little mental block or my mental block that I had, that all I have are these and what could you possibly do with that? Once you get past that, or once I did, the possibilities were endless. So we were creating marker prints with aluminum foil. We were doing calligraphed sculptures with aluminum foil and cereal boxes and whatever adhesive we had on hand. We were drawing and drawing and drawing and using our markers to create a kind of paint. There were so many ideas that there just wasn't even enough time for it. And that's when I realized that classroom art supplies, they're not boring. Your only limitation is your imagination. And then that kind of brings me to my last thing that I've changed my mind about, which is you can't have a quality art program during a pandemic. I think all of us have realized and shown the world that yes, we can. It's going to look different. It's going to challenge us. It might not be anything that we were, it's definitely not anything we were trained for, but look at us, we did it. You can have a quality art program with limited supplies in the middle of a pandemic. We made it happen. So there you have it, y'all. These are the 5 things that I have changed my mind about, except for that first one. I'm still like pretty mushy about it. I'm all over the place on that first one. But you know, I think that that just goes to show that teaching is like, it's very elastic. It's ever changing. It's fluid. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to also realize what works good for one doesn't mean that it's a one size fits all. And it's all about experimenting, trying, throwing everything at the wall, seeing what sticks, being okay with what doesn't stick, even though you were sure that it was gonna, and just being surprised when something does, like me and my recess art. Thanks, guys. I would love to hear some things that you have changed your mind about. I think a good follow-up for this would be some things that I will never change my mind about in the art room. I wonder what that list would be. I've already got the wheels turning. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.